I'm Dr. Tyler Murphy, a lifestyle medicine specialist with Holland Hospital, and I'll be joined tonight by Tina Van de Gucci, who is part of the Healthy Life programs at the hospital as well. And as you can see from the title, which I'm now realizing I don't really have a slide advancer, I'm wondering, is this what this is over here? I bet you so. Maybe not. Well, you guys can work on that for me for a minute. But tonight, what we're ultimately going to talk about is sleep. And friends that I know, friends that I've yet to meet, I'm glad that you took some time out of your busy evenings to talk with us about this opportunity to figure out how the experience of sleep can be better. We're going to do a couple things tonight. And this is kind of how we're going to do that. You can see an outline on this slide. But really, we're going to have two major segments. One where we talk a little bit about the perspective and the scope of the sleep experience. And I'll do that aspect of the talk tonight. And I'm kind of like the person who warms up the main act. You know, I'm going to get you interested and the juices flowing. And then I'll turn it over to the game changer. Tina here to drive it home, and she's going to talk about tips that you can implement as early as tonight in order to improve your experience of sleep. Now, as you can see, she's dressed a little different than I. She asked if I would wear pajamas, and I saved you all from that. So, in order to have a framework to better understand the sleep experience, we need to understand what actually happens when we sleep. Now, I know that's a little busy, and there's only a few things I want you to take from this, but I'll orient you first. You can see along the x-axis, that's the horizontal one, those are the time and hours of sleep, and on the vertical axis, we have the depth of sleep, from the top being awake to the bottom being very deeply asleep. So here's the four things I want you to take from this. There's a lot going on when you're sleeping. It isn't like you just go to sleep and it's this flat, straight line of rest until you wake up. And all of that is going on for a reason, and that's point number two. There's a reason that all of that is there, and it needs to be there in order to have an optimal experience of sleep. Number three is that really, there's two main divisions of sleep. The first night of half of sleep, you can see there's a lot of depth of sleep. We call that slow wave sleep. And that's the time when the body is having the most restoration. And then the second half of the night of sleep is characterized by REM sleep. And that's the time when the mind and the brain are undergoing some respite. And point number four is that it is normal to have a brief awakening after REM sleeps. So what are the functions of sleep? You know, is it just to kind of recharge the batteries? That's what was believed at one time, but we know it's much deeper than that now. We know that it's important for resetting ion channels and metabolic functions, that there's an element of repair to our tissues, like our muscles and joints, and our cells and our organs, and even the DNA within our cells. We also know that it's a state of anti-inflammatory, so that, you know, living life is inflammation-inducing, and so here's a chance where we can have a respite from that. We also know that it's antioxidant because, again, living life produces oxidative stress, and this counters that. It improves mood, it improves the body health through optimizing hormones, improving blood pressure, sugar, and even helping with weight. It also improves brain health by enhancing neuroplasticity as well as memory and cognitive functions. It improves memory, both the formation of memory as well as recall, point and parcel why it's not a good idea to pull all-nighters to study, because you need that sleep to help make memory. It also helps with energy restoration. So optimal sleep requires the right amount of sleep as well as the right quality of sleep. In this country, the most common problem is not enough sleep. 50% of those in this country sleep less than the government, the guideline recommended amount of sleep, which is 7 to 9 hours. And 25% of those in this country have a quality of sleep disorder. Unfortunately, most people who experience effects of poor sleep don't really know it. And that's because the majority of people don't experience acute sleep deprivation. They experience chronic sleep deprivation. Now, acute sleep deprivation, that's that situation where, you know, you had an all-nighter with some friends. When's the last time you did that? Or, you know, you were studying for an exam all night long. I'm canvassing the room here and guessing maybe this isn't necessarily germane, but the point of it is when you have those situations, that's when you get the classic sleepiness, right? I didn't sleep all night long, so I'm tired or I'm fatigued or I don't have enough energy. Chronic sleep depression, on the other hand, is a completely different beast. And that's, you know, accounts for these symptoms noted here. And you can see we can have everything from pain to fogginess and brain fog to cognitive impairment, memory impairment, mood disorders. It can alter how hungry you are and so your weight. And the problem is a lot of people go to the doctor for these symptoms and it never gets understood that the problem or a contributor to those symptoms may be a problem with the experience of sleep. Now, what happens when you don't sleep well? What are the consequences of sleep deprivation? Well, some of these may not be surprising to see, you know, reduced productivity, traffic accidents, occupational errors, problems with academics or home life. But some of these things may be more shocking. Believe it or not, sleep is an integral part of making certain medical problems that you might have worse, or even in the causation of these medical problems. Things like diabetes. Anybody hear of that in this room? Hypertension or high blood pressure, obesity, atrial fibrillation, heart disease, and even cancer. In fact, this is so much of an issue that newly diagnosed persons with atrial fibrillation, all of those people are required to have sleep evaluations. Persons with newly diagnosed high blood pressure, or what was once controlled, now not, required to have sleep evaluations. That's because chronic sleep deprivation is that relevant to these medical illnesses. So what are some clues of a sleep problem? Well, falling asleep while working, that's not normal. And if you do something important like operate a crane, that's really a problem. Napping at stoplights, not a good thing. Napping in the shower is also not a good thing, and I have a personal story about that. So anybody who trained as a physician is used to having sleep deprivation, sometimes acute, sometimes chronic. And so luckily my wife, if I didn't come out of the shower after 15 or 20 minutes, would come in and jolt me and get me to finish up after working for 30 to 36 hours consecutively. By the way, we know once you exceed 16 hours of consecutive work, you have the equivalent function of a blood alcohol of 0.08. Guess what the legal limit of driving while impaired in this state is? 0.05 now, I believe. So in other words, sleep deprivation matters, and it causes some serious challenges with being highly active and functional. If you are one who is unable to make it through the evening news or your favorite periodical, again, a sign that there's something going on with your experience of sleep. If you boast, I can fall asleep anywhere, anytime. Again, that's not really something to celebrate. That's an indication of a problem. And if you're used to saying, I can fall asleep before my head hits a pillow, take note. So I'm going to spend just a few minutes answering some commonly asked questions that I see in my office. The first one is, what if I have a sleep problem? What do I do? The first question that I generally ask patients is, Well, what makes you think you have a sleep problem? You know, what? Tell me about your night of sleep. When do you go to bed? When do you wake up? How many times do you wake up during the night? How long does it take you to get to sleep, etc.? Honestly, what I learn in, I'm going to ballpark it, maybe 25% of the cases, a person doesn't have a sleep problem at all. They're describing perfectly normal sleep. What happens as you age is this. When you have those periods of brief awakening after an episode of REM sleep, you're more conscious than what you used to be as a youngster. And so the person who goes to sleep, falls asleep within 20 minutes, wakes up maybe after 3 to 4 hours of sleep, and then might wake up 2 or 3 more times every hour to 2 hours, that's normal sleep. And the difference between you as a person now and a person when you were younger is you just didn't remember it when you were younger because it was at a less light amount of consciousness. And as a general rule of thumb, as we age, everything shifts up. Remember that cycle, that slide I showed you? Everything just migrates up a little bit. So you get a little more consciousness after a REM cycle. And that's not a problem unless it takes you more than 20 minutes to get back to sleep. The most common related sleep problem in this country, again, I said this already, but it bears repeating, is we just don't sleep enough. You know, we've gotten ourselves into lifestyles where we're busy, we burn the candles at both ends, and so we compromise sleep. On average, a person now sleeps one full sleep cycle less than a person, 50 years ago. Really, we can blame our sleep problem on Thomas Edison, right, in the invention of the light bulb. Before lights, all we had was candlelight, and, you know, that was a whole different experience of life. And so as our society operates differently, as we have stores open later and jobs that work way into the night, this has had a real effect on how sleep goes in our society. So the most common way you can improve your experience of sleep, just sleep more. It might take an extra cycle of sleep for those who are less efficient sleepers than others, and that's okay. Time in bed and time in sleep will generally fix a lot of what ails our sleep experience. But for some, it's not just a time issue. For some, it's a quality issue. Remember on that slide, you saw all that activity between these different depths of sleep and functions. If there's a quality of sleep problem, that means you're not spending the right amount of time in those stages, which means that your refreshness or the actual repair, restore, reset, rehab that you saw on some of those earlier slides is not occurring the way it needs to. And at times, there can be other medical problems to account for that. There can be other actual organic medical problems, things like pain syndromes, mood symptoms or disorders, hormonal disorders, etc. Or there can be primary sleep disorders, things like sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, or periodic limb movements. These obviously affect the quality of sleep. Now, our time tonight is not really to go into the depths of those two categories of problems that affect sleep, because really, that's not something you're going to be able to work through on your own. Okay, that's not a self-directed improvement kind of situation. That's a situation you need to be in care with your physician about. But what certainly accounts for the bulk of quality of sleep issues is issues related to sleep hygiene. Now, this isn't hygiene like, you know, you didn't shower well so you stink and you keep up because of that. But no, this is the way that you live your day and the way that you experience your sleep. So these are the habits of life that affect your experience of sleep. So, do I need a sleep study? Anybody in this room not heard of a sleep study before? Let me see your hands. I'm going to guess, so my kids raised their hand, I believe that. But pretty much everybody's heard of a sleep study because this is something that is very prevalently done these days. And I know there's even probably people in this room who thinks there's a conspiracy that we're all trying to get people on CPAP machines and we all must get kickbacks or something if for every person we get on one of those things. But I'll rest assured there is no such a thing. But the reality is there are a lot of sleep problems that specifically sleep apnea, and that's partly because of what we are as a society now. Sleep apnea goes up as weight goes up, and so if you look at trends of weight over time, our society has become heavier and heavier as years go on. Now we have 2 out of every 3 persons as either overweight or obese. And so that's why we see so much sleep apnea. And unfortunately, the majority of the sleep apnea out there is still yet undiagnosed. Sleep apnea does cause extra work and stress on your heart and lungs, so it is not something to ignore. And if you have that, it is something you're going to want to address further. That's what would take a sleep study to figure out, though. And the secondary question on that is, do you need to use a CPAP machine if you're diagnosed with sleep apnea? The answer is not necessarily. That is still the gold standard, but oral appliances and other therapies for some degrees and severities may be appropriate. Even positional therapy, where you just don't sleep in the position that causes you problems. So are naps good? Again, the gold standard here is the best experience of sleep is one that's obtained all at night. But at times, naps might make sense. It can bring up the number of hours of sleep. So if you're going to do that, try to keep it to 30 minutes or less and try not to do it too close to bedtime so that it creates an unhealthy cycle there. Now, this is my favorite slide of the entire night. And if any of you know me as a physician, because I am your physician, or you've heard me speak in other ways, you know that I don't feel that sleep medicines are safe. And it's really not anything unique to my opinion. This is what the medical literature says about sleep medicines. We've seen them kill patients in our office. We've had persons fall off ladders and die. We've had persons drive and die. This happens in every physician's office. The bottom line is your risk of kidney problems, your risk of Alzheimer's and memory and cognitive issues, your risk of falling and breaking a hip, all of those things are drastically higher if you take a sleep medicine. This is not only for prescription medicines, sleep medicines, which all exist on the Beers list. About everybody in this room has a little age behind them, and most of you are at an age where you shouldn't be taking medicines on the Beers list, which is a list of all the medicines that are risky for persons with age behind them, unless there's a really good reason that your doctor can convince you of as to why you would want to take a medicine that is known to harm. Okay? Unfortunately, not only does this apply to the prescription medicines, this also applies to the over-the-counter medicines. So when should you see your doctor? Well, if you're asking this question, that may be a good time. Whenever you're curious, that's probably a reasonable thing to do. But if you're sleeping more and you're not feeling like that's really improving your experience of sleep, or you've tried some of the things that we'll even talk about tonight and that doesn't help your sleep experience, then that's a reasonable time. But particularly in these situations, if you don't feel refreshed in the morning, that's not normal. You should feel after maybe, you know, a few minutes of waking up. My wife doesn't let me talk to her for so long after we wake up in the morning. So, you know, give it a little bit of time. But after that, if you're not feeling like you're refreshed, that's not normal. If you feel more tired than you should before the end of the day, or you have some of those situations like we described, you're falling asleep while watching the news, etc., that's not normal. And if continues, you should be seen. And if somebody has told you that you stop breathing when you sleep, or they won't even sleep in the same room as you, that's a time when you would want to get that checked out. And so finally, before I turn it over to the closer, when should you see a sleep therapist? Well, How you spend your day determines how your night goes. And how your night goes really is a setup for what's going to happen during the day. And sleep therapists are uniquely poised to help you create this paradigm of habits. Habits that you have during the day that help your night, and also a surround and structure to how you experience your night so that you can be your best during the day. And so they're trained in using cognitive behavioral strategies that are scientific and evidence-based. And so that can solve a lot of what ails the sleep experience being suboptimal for those in this society.
Well, Dr. Murphy's last slide mentioned evidence-based techniques, and that's what I hope to cover today. And I must say, I'm usually in an exercise attire and speak on all things exercise, and I could probably lecture on exercise standing on my head. This is new to me, and I love it. I'm very interested. I'm actually practicing what I preach right here, and I'm practicing my New Year's resolution. So my sleep hygiene is to get started into my sleep routine earlier in the night. So I thought, I can go right to bed from here, and I'm ready to go. But I'm going to have a little audience interaction here while I look at this slide. Tell me what is wrong with this picture, with these pictures. What's wrong with these pictures? Go ahead. What's going on? Caffeine. You bet. There's a lot of things going wrong with this one. Name a few. What do you guys see? Alcohol. Yep, there's a few more things.
Stimulation.
All right. Stimulation. Late night. What are they doing? There's a feast, right? So there's some late night eating. All right. What's going on here?
Stress
definitely. Over here. That's me, right? I don't own a cat. Because for another reason, I want to add this one in here, by the way, because I couldn't put pictures of obviously everything. I found out after I had owned two cats that I actually was allergic to cats. And being allergic to something produces histamine. And that histamine can keep you awake, if you didn't know. So now that we're also talking summertime, we're actually in Michigan here, it's every season, right? I think heard just somebody last week, all these allergies, winter allergies. But allergies, pollen, actually spending time out in the yard or the woods and then maybe heading off to bed. You might need to actually wash your hair, wash the pet, wash your shoes, leave your hiking clothes outside of the bedroom. So just to start to think about that, there's actually some other ways. Besides anybody owning a cat, right, they love to do that, and dogs and so forth waking you up. All right, what's going on here? All right. Anybody guilty of this one? A few of you? One or two? All right. And I know nobody's guilty of this one. As you elbow your partner here, what's going on?
Snoring.
Okay. As Dr. Murphy said, if someone's refusing to sleep in the same room as you, you may have an issue. I want to just let you know that I basically dug into about the last 3 years of research on sleep science, which we call sleep hygiene, lifestyle habits, we call it sleep hygiene. And I have a plethora, and I don't want to overload you. I may have you stand up and down a few times to keep you awake, but I do want you to know I have research, and I can provide the doctors, and I can cite the studies upon request, but if I spend time doing that in here in front of you, we're not going to get through this. So I'm going to go ahead and go to that. No, wrong way. So which one? Do I pull this one down? Done. There, which one? Right there, on the other side. Okay, perfect. All right, so just get started with some tips for better sleep. What are we going to do about it? Well, the first one, use bed for sleep only. And I'd like to think of this as thinking of oasis, your bedroom as an oasis versus an office. Think oasis, not office. I want to just say one word about sleep positions. I do know a few of my clients actually are sleeping in recliners, and I'm not so sold on that one yet. There's pros and cons. Sleeping on your back has shown to be the best for posture and also obviously issues like reflux. However, sleeping on your side proves to be better for your brain. There's a clearing of the waste that's happening. The con of sleeping on your side is it's bad for wrinkles. So you got to weigh that one out. But establishing a regular sleep cycle, plus or minus 30 minutes, you know, give or take, that's life. Plus or minus 3 hours, now we're running into some problems. So establishing a regular sleep cycle. As Dr. Murphy mentioned, we had the slide up here about the sleep cycles. There's the non-REM, it's called. It's the deeper sleep, the restorative sleep. That is when most of the restoration happens. And I call those the hours of power, which is actually between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. In the winter, however, because we've got this thing called daylight savings time, actually 9 p.m. until 2 a.m. So keeping those hours in mind. I'll go back and expand on that a little bit later. I've used this adage for quite a while. It's an old adage, actually, from a health pioneer. Every hour of sleep before midnight equals 2 hours after midnight. Anybody ever heard of that before? Well, someone called me on it after I'd presented this before, and they says, where did that come from? I've never heard of that before. So I found it out. I don't like to present research that I can't back up. And it was first said by an 1800 health pioneer named Ellen White. But it's been repeated and repeated and repeated. I feel comfortable saying it to you because the last I heard it was in a lecture by a UCLA neuroscientist and sleep researcher. She used the same adage. So if she's comfortable saying that, then I'd like to agree with that. I think it's important for you guys as far as the it's normal. You know, do you hear that comment about Dr. Murphy was saying some of those sleep cycles are normal. So knowing that some of these sleep patterns that you may be experiencing are normal, that may be helpful as we move through this. Some of you might claim, and I've heard people tell me, oh, I'm a night owl. Any night owls here? Any morning larks here? Okay, so we got some morning larks. All right. Now, some people will say, but that's just my natural physiology, my natural circadian rhythm is that I'm a night owl. I'm not convinced that it's nature versus nurture, lifestyle habits. So I'm not completely convinced that it's just natural for you to be a night owl. I think if we can look at your sleep hygiene, it is changeable. That you actually, the night owl in you could be changed to a morning lark. Not by tomorrow morning, but eventually. Okay, there's, you know, these circadian rhythms were established thousands of years ago, and there's just not a whole lot of wiggle room in that. Any night shifters? Anybody ever been a night shifter? Has some night shifters in the family? Oh, you know, there's a reason why they pay shift premium. Seriously, if you can, ASAP, if possible, get off of the night shift. 11% risk, and just some studies I've seen, 11% risk of death, increase of heart disease, cancer. If it's been more than a decade on that shift, a 6.5-year advanced cognitive decline. Advanced, 6.5 years by working 10 years on a night shift. So another interesting fact, the moon. They found even in these sleep labs where there's no exposure to sunlight, darkness, no cues, hey, it's bedtime, it's not. They found there was a decrease in melatonin, and there was actually a decrease by 20 minutes just before the days just before or just after a full moon. So if you've got some big events coming up at the time around a full moon, you may want to start to head to bed earlier and get a little bit of extra sleep. It's just proven that around the full moon, about 20 minutes less sleep per night. All right, moving on to eliminating bedroom noise. Some of you said the person you're sitting next to makes a lot of noise at night. Well, there are these things called earplugs. That's maybe a possibility. And they're also, I think we're going to get down to that in a minute. I first want to share a study with you. iPad readers. So we're actually getting down right now to talking about those screens. As you guys putting your phone arrays right, they're all turned off. Okay. iPad readers had delayed circadian rhythms indicated by a decrease in the melatonin levels of an hour. So their circadian rhythms were off by an hour. They were less sleepy before bedtime and less alert the next morning after 8 hours of sleep. All right, so what should we do? We should stop the screens 30 and some say up to 60 minutes before bedtime. So if you've been doing it right up to bedtime or in bedtime, then start with maybe 15 or 30 and working yourself up to 60 minutes before bedtime. And sleep in the dark. Another thing I brought for my show and tell is here some eye masks, just so in case you are sleeping in an area that is not too dark, darkness is best. Why? It gives a clear message to the brain. It tells you the darkness will increase your output of hormones, but it gives clear light and dark signals to the brain. All right. And here's another reason as far as why. The screens will trick your brain into thinking it's light out, so it doesn't make as much melatonin as it should. Are you with me? All right. So we want to getting the natural melatonin production. That's what I'm here for. Now, I didn't spend time to talk about chamomile and lavender and all these other wonderful things. If those work for you, those are all extra wonderful sleep aids. I want to talk about a little bit the more heavy hitters, and if those other things help you, that's wonderful. But getting your natural melatonin production instead of actually taking melatonin, ingesting it, if you can get your natural melatonin back on track, that is the most sustainable scenario. So a goal would be to get to sleep about 15 minutes earlier each night until you hit 10 p.m. If you're already there, wonderful. But otherwise, about 15 to 30 minutes at a time to start to work that forward. And also, if you're waking up far after 6 a.m., because those are really the bookends, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Notice how that coincides with sunrise, sunset. So then start to wake yourself earlier up earlier about 15 minutes until you're up at about 6 a.m. So slowly working towards those hours would be best. All right, I'm going to have you guys take a quick stand. It's darker than here than I'd like it to be, so I'm going to have you just stand up, stretch, roll your shoulders back a little bit, take a big breath, reach your arms up, grab some water if you didn't get some. I'm going to grab some. I put it right here. All right. All right, go ahead and sit down if you'd like. If you prefer to stand, though, feel free to go to the back of the room. There's, you know, anytime you're in a lecture, you don't feel like you're a captive audience, you can get up and stand in the back and stretch, especially if you have some back pain. all right, so here's some more tips. Increasing your daytime exposure to sunlight. Now, this slide is key. I love this picture over here. Have you ever heard of a pineal gland? You all have one. And you all have a body clock that's also in there somewhere. I'm not real technical. I really don't need these words right here. I just love the brain showing the pineal gland. And light and dark signals are fed through the optic nerve. So Brad, he was nervous. What was I going to do with this flashlight? So this is my show and little display, my graphic. So this is the sunshine. I don't want to shine in anybody's eyes. But sunshine, exposure to sunshine, comes in through where? The eyes, the optic nerve. That is so key. So what happens if we've been wearing these all day long? Or we have UV in our glasses and just are all completely not exposed to the sunlight all day long. So I'd encourage you at least to get 20 to 30 minutes of exposure to natural sunlight. And again, why? It communicates with your body clock. The pineal gland communicates with your body clock in the brain, and they are responsible for releasing amazing hormones, and one of them is the one that we're going to talk about most, is the melatonin. That's just huge. And the melatonin, as I said, the pineal gland communicates with the body clock, circadian rhythm. You see how everything is starting to become connected. All right, daytime sun. So when we're out and we're getting exposed to the sun in the daytime, actually prevents the secretion of melatonin at that time. It's not time yet. It's not time for the body. That's why these mood lights, and we didn't get exposure to natural sunlight, you might feel a little sleepy if you're in a dark room all day long, or if you're working in a dark area for too long. You could start to feel sleepy. You're not getting those natural cues from the sun. When the sun stops for the day, and that's why sleeping in the dark is so important. Body says, now it's the time. Now it's the time. I've got enough melatonin. I've got enough sunshine coming into my pineal gland now at night. And this is the only time it's released between the hours of power, which are what? 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. Those are the actual hours of power. In the wintertime, so right now, it was already dark before you guys were coming in here, 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. is when the most restoration is happening. Those are your hours of power. So, and besides melatonin, there's a few more. They got big fancy long names. But there's about three more that are amazing hormones that are responsible for your increased mood, increased learning capacity, anti-aging, and a natural painkiller. So someone that's living with chronic pain, sleep is so important. You will produce the hormones while you're sleeping to deal with that pain the next day. Okay, oh, this is interesting, this study. A study of office workers with desks far from the windows got 46 minutes less sleep compared to their windowed colleagues. So wherever your little cubicle is at work, I have a great spot, don't I? If you're coming to see us, Lifestyle Medicine Center, I'm right in front of all the windows and I love it. You're getting the cues. The brain is receiving the light and dark cues all throughout the day. Those people who sat away from the windows, their circadian rhythms were out of whack. So start to implement some of these things. The melatonin, it's been called, melatonin is awesome. It is the most powerful nocturnal antioxidant. It removes your free radicals produced by stress. It's a nocturnal cleanup crew. And it only does its job, listen, if you're sleeping when the pineal gland sends a signal. So if you're one of these, I remember, you know, I'm one of these, I love to have it all done. I just can't sleep unless it's all done. So sleep gets pushed back to 1, 2. You know, in college, it's maybe 3 o'clock. Well, turn my paper in because I can sleep till noon. I can get 8 hours of sleep. Not the same. Your body, you will not be getting that restorative sleep because you missed it. If you stay up till midnight, you've missed a couple hours of that amazing hours of power. Hours of power. If you leave with one thing today, remembering the hours of power is when all the restorative hormones are released. So much benefit. Okay, I wanted to have you guys quick stand one more time while I cover the next one, because you see right here, move at least every hour. Well, that's why I'm having you moving during the day. You know, they're making the easy standard, very easy exercise, our movement standard. Sit less, move more. There it is. You can all go home. that's basically what it is. You know, implement that into your 2020. Go ahead and have a seat. We'll talk more. There's really interesting things about exercise I will present in a couple minutes. Eliminate caffeine. I'm not going to dwell on this one. You pretty much did your own experiments, right? Most of you have kind of figured that out by now. We have a few young ones in our office. I was sitting at a birthday party yesterday with them, and oh, my husband and I, we can drink coffee right before bed, and we have the coffee maker for Christmas, and da 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 da. Oh no, can you guys get away with that? No. And actually, it's recommended caffeine not after, for sure, not after one. Most would even say not after noon. No caffeine after noon. And there's caffeine in many things just besides coffee. There's teas that have caffeine in them. I'm a chocoholic. I have to be careful. If you're having a couple strong hot chocolates or eating, ingesting chocolate, and these crazy energy drinks and things like that. Okay. All right, you saw in that first slide, we talked about avoiding alcohol. Alcohol decreases that hormone output. Remember I said there was at least those four amazing hormones that are released? Alcohol will reduce that. And alcohol is a sedative. And a sedative, sedation, is not sleep. When you're sedated, you're not sleeping. Don't confuse the two. There's an increase in brain activity associated with resting, but not sleeping. So it actually is blocking your REM, your dream sleep. Alcohol is blocking the dream sleep. It helps you to get to sleep, but not to stay asleep. Avoiding high sodium foods close to bedtime. I'm going to just skip right over that one because I want to spend a little bit more time on eliminating limit after dinner and late night snacking. Your stomach likes a rest. Your stomach needs a rest. A full gut equals a busy gut. And often that leads to things like reflux, gas, bloating, indigestion, heartburn. Would those be sleep disruptors, anybody? If you want to admit it. Yeah, quite so. You know, the word breakfast, if you break it up, it's called breaking a fast. There's a reason. It's called breaking a fast because you'd want to kind of sleep through the night, certainly not eating in the night, in the middle of the night, but you're tapering as you go toward bedtime, so your gut is emptying and not full as you go off to sleep. So your stomach is emptied as you're going to sleep, breaking your fast. Because actually, an interesting thing, so you're actually, you've heard of these, there's all these new things always going around, intermittent fasting, and there's some different buzz diet things happening. But if you go to the old standby, you're all fasting through the night. If you're sleeping 8 hours, you're fasting for 8 hours. That is wonderful. Because what happens when you fast is your body makes tryptophan. Now, tryptophan is kind of a cousin to that melatonin. Tryptophan actually helps make melatonin and serotonin. Very needed and good mood hormones. So your meal timing and how much you're eating throughout the day, eat enough so you're not super hungry and filling up right before bedtime. Eat enough throughout the day, starting with breakfast. Breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, supper like a pauper. If you're very stressed, your body can kind of handle one thing at a time. If you have a full gut, that's stressful. So it'd be better actually to skip supper. Most of us can handle that. We're not going to work a 8-hour lumberjack shift, are we? I mean, if you are, you may need to eat. But otherwise, if you're really stressed, have a very light supper. If you're feeling ill, if you can do that, have a very light supper. That will help you sleep. And after a few days of that, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. I always do this. Many people say, I can't eat breakfast. I can't eat breakfast. It makes me nauseous. Well, after a few days of having a very, very light supper, you'll wake wanting to break that fast and have a wonderful breakfast. All right, I will move on. Obesity is actually one of the most common causes of sleep apnea. That's where we're talking about maintaining a healthy BMI, and Dr. Murphy already mentioned that. And if you're frequently getting up to urinate through the night, it's recommended to not drink after 7 p.m. The liquid kind of takes about 90 minutes to get through. So stop drinking after 7 p.m. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about food choices because we were just talking about food timing, food choices. Having that big breakfast like a king, it would be wonderful to have your protein choices earlier in the day. Protein keeps you alert and it gives you that stamina. So make sure that you've got some hearty protein for breakfast and for lunch. Supper, yeah. Do you have to really be super on your toes and alert, or can you just kind of fade off into a nice, pleasant sleep? That'd be the nice time to have easy to digest carbohydrates. Kind of a nice time. And actually, the carbohydrates produce the serotonin called comfort foods. Have you heard of that? So kind of that, and sleepy carbs. So just taking a look at your plate. And if you're having your steak or your maybe a lot of nuts or other things that you find hard to digest, maybe supper time is not a good time to have those. Let your body work on those earlier throughout the day. Okay, meat, by the way, speaking of steak, meat is high in methionine. And I don't know if you know what methionine does, but it blocks tryptophan. Good thing, right? The tryptophan, we want tryptophan, so we don't want to block that. Because the tryptophan makes melatonin, which we need, and serotonin. So a diet high in meat could also be a culprit, could be something that's disrupting your sleep. And sleep, by the way, burns 50 to 100 calories per hour. So let's all go on a sleep marathon, right? And we're going to burn a lot of calories. You can burn more calories up and at them, but it's so your body is actually active and doing things during sleep. Sleep is also often called the secret sauce of a weight loss plan. So if you've been stuck just not getting the results you want, look at your sleep and see what's going on there. You may actually be able to add the secret sauce ingredient to your weight loss plan. When you're not getting enough sleep, your hormone level, the hormone called leptin, which is the hormone that makes you feel full, that one decreases. The other one, the bad guy, ghrelin is the one that makes you feel hungry and especially crave those comfort foods. And here's the bugger, it signals your body to store energy. When you're not getting enough sleep, it thinks that you need to kind of fight or flight, and it's gonna hang on to that, and it will store energy. Not the thing that you want if you're trying to lose weight. Two studies, quick ones. 6 to 8 hours of sleep per night weight loss group. So this first group had about 6 to 8 hours of sleep per night. They lost more weight than the group that had less than 6 hours. The second group, age 25 to 65 overweight women. Those who had with the fragmented sleep, and which fragmented, I mean, they were waking up 5 or more times per night, they lost less than the good sleepers. So you can kind of see how this is actually a vicious cycle. One thing will affect the other. We're going to jump down to, I quickly am going to insert room temperature in here because I want to talk about something called brown fat. Sleeping in a cold room. Now cold, what kind of room temperatures are you guys sleeping in? Yeah, you guys, you're good. Good. 60 to 67 is recommended. So the 60 to 67 is recommended. And if you do, here's what happens. You will stimulate your brown fat. And brown fat is active fat. It burns more calories and it improves your insulin sensitivity. So brown fat is a good fat. And by doing so, sleeping in cold, you can increase your metabolic activity. It was interesting, there was a side note that you needed actual shivering. The process of actual shivering is kind of, and think of hibernation, kind of working, you know, working your way, your body temperature coming down. It's easier, keep this in mind, it's easier to warm yourself up than cool yourself down. I was going to put on that slide of sleep disruptors, too hot. Can you sleep when you're too hot? Versus usually you can, your body will be able to, it'll shiver you, it'll warm you up, and you can fall into a better, deeper sleep if you are colder. Okay. I just don't want to make sure, I don't want to forget anything. Is this good stuff? Are you learning anything you didn't know? That's my goal for you. I mean, I want you to, you know, a lot of sleep hygiene. It's not just the typical 5 things. And understanding the reason why can be really helpful, I think. So we're moving on to exercise. Exercise, remember those good hormones that are released because the pineal gland and the sunshine? If you sleep between the hours of power, which are 10 to 3 p.m., hours of power, you will actually double the good hormones if you exercise. It will double the output of those good hormones from the pineal gland. It's going to be affected by if you increase your duration and you increase your intensity, you will increase your sleep quality. So that's why I have this slide up here just to quickly give you the scenario, what's recommended. 30 minutes, at least 30 minutes, almost every day. Almost every day. So if you need a day rest, okay, but pretty much every day you should be getting 30 minutes of movement. Preferably aerobic movement, that you're huffing and puffing, that you're, it's a consistent, sustained 30 minutes of movement. Or if you don't have quite that much time, all right, you can just do 25 minutes 3 days a week, but that has to be high intensity interval training. And some of my clients here know what that is. That's, you're running for your life, you're biking for your life, you're gasping for breath. You're very breathless, and that's a very good things happen when you do that. And also, this high intensity they're speaking of here, they're actually speaking of muscle strengthening, resistance training, calisthenics. So those are all important. Here's a study. Older adults with insomnia were able to sleep 45 to 60 minutes longer by exercising 30 minutes 3 to 4 times a week. So some of you are maybe doing that now. 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week, they were sleeping longer. These were adults who had insomnia. When they started this program, they were able to sleep 45 to 60 minutes longer. Who wouldn't like that? That sounds good. Another study, after 12 weeks of high-intensity interval training, those are those bursts where you're breathless, obese sleep apnea patients. So take note, this is, exercise is good for everyone. Obese sleep apnea patients decrease their apnea events and their daytime sleepiness. High intensity interval training is especially helpful for those with any sleep disturbances. That high intensity interval training. Many clients come to me and they're doing so many things right, but that's the one thing that has kind of slipped their routine, that they haven't added, they haven't tried yet. My clients that come by, the first thing, here's your homework, go do these hard intensity intervals for about 30 seconds, making yourself breathless. Do that at least 6 times. Don't start another interval until you've caught your breath, and then you can start again. So get 6 bouts, about of 6 of those every day, or at least 3 to 5 days a week. Okay, why? Why? Well, why does that make a difference sleep-wise? If you want to know the why, I try to really decipher through the scientific lingo, so I hope I can make it pretty plain, because I needed to do this to understand it myself. But here's 3 reasons why it makes a difference. It strains your brain. Exercise is hard. Maintaining exertion of perseverance of exercise is fatiguing. Anybody vouch for that? I've done an Ironman once. Boy, did I sleep good that night. Yeah, it's fatiguing. But even smaller bouts of exercise, small 30-second bouts, is a strain. First 10 seconds, you feel like you're Superman. I've got this. This feels great. Then all of a sudden, you go into what's called oxygen debt. That doesn't feel so good. And you've got to push through it. You have to mentally push through. All right, the second reason. There's an increase in body temperature when you exercise. We know that. We get warm when we exercise, right? Why does that make a difference? It's very interesting, because the body will adapt when you're done. It overshoots to cool you down. And that's a good thing. But you need to do it far enough in advance of bedtime. Your body will overshoot to slowly throughout the day cool you back down. And it tends to overshoot to make you colder. So you will sleep better. It will put you in a deeper sleep, somewhat as hibernation. So very important. Those who did the high-intensity interval training, I don't see them here, but they, especially not before bed, they slept. It is a sleep disruptor if you sleep too close to bedtime, because it makes you too warm. The body temperature is too hot, and you don't sleep well. Here's some immediate results. Tonight. Or tomorrow, if you want an actual, these are all long-term effects. Yes, you'll sleep better. It's not going to happen day of. You're not going to get all these benefits day of. But here's one that you will. You can increase your sleep. By exercising, you can actually increase your sleep by 10 minutes. You'll decrease your REM sleep by 4 minutes. And you may think, well, that doesn't sound good. But you've increased your deeper sleep by 4 minutes. I'd prefer you to get the deeper sleep versus the REM sleep, wouldn't you? Do you want to sleep all night long and just have this light sleep but never get that restorative deeper sleep? So that's why exercise is important. It's time to take a water break, so I'm going to have all you all stand so I can find out who's sleeping. Go ahead and have a stand up. Okay. All right. You guys all with me? Everybody's feeling good? Okay. All right. So have a sleep. We're going to go have a sleep. Did you hear that? Oh, man. Have a sleep a little bit later. Not quite yet. William Shakespeare referred to sleep as a balm of hurt minds. Sleep is the balm of hurt minds. There's so many wonderful things on this slide. I do want to tell you that a sleepless night can actually trigger a 30% increase in anxiety. So one sleepless night, the next day, 30% increase in anxiety. Deep sleep decreases anxiety overnight. How? It reorganizes the connections in the brain. Do you all not feel better after you put a problem down for the night and you wake up and it wasn't near as big problem as that gigantic problem it seemed to be at midnight, right? Everything is reorganized, the anxiety is lessened. There's a professional sleep journal statement that just really hit me. I love this statement. Sleep is a natural, non-pharmaceutical remedy for anxiety disorders diagnosed in some 40 million Americans. Now, many Americans have anxiety. Many people take many things for their anxiety or do many things because of their anxiety that are not good for them. They have bad lifestyle habits and so forth. Can I read this again? Sleep is a natural, non-pharmaceutical remedy. So take note. The best bridge between despair and hope is a good night's sleep. Worry, you know those hormones, those good hormones? Worry decreases those. Worry cuts the output of those good hormones. It will decrease them. So going through this slide, well, perhaps, and as a sleep science coach for Holland Hospital, and I do have handouts along the side if need be, I've worked with many clients, and I'm amazed after working, you know, we've gone through a lot of the sleep hygiene issues, and they've corrected many issues, and we actually find that the issue needing to be addressed was anxiety and depression. Now that's beyond my scope of practice. I know when to refer to behavioral health services, or perhaps a pastor or a friend. But quite often, true anxiety issues, there's some big issues that need to be addressed. Anxiety and stressful issues may need to be worked on. Being in nature is a wonderful trigger for relaxation responses in your brain. So actually getting out every day and being in nature, but at the end of the night or in through your night as you're sleeping, a possible something you may want to try is a sound machine. They've proven the two sounds, rainforest or a babbling brook, prove to be anything that's more natural sounding. So probably not the airplanes, the train tracks, these other things, the dryer, those types of sounds you can choose on some of these apps. There are that you can choose, but those trigger a relaxation response in the brain. As I was saying, there are apps that you can use with nature settings. And what you want, I wasn't aware of this one, I just learned this recently, because I usually like I've gone through them, I like the sound of brown noise, but they say actually pink noise is what you're looking for. Pink noise, the frequencies of that sound are more natural and balanced than the white noises. You've heard of white noise. So look around on those free apps and those things if you need to on traveling or if you have a machine and look for pink noise or natural sounds. There's also, we've got a deep breather over here. There's a gentleman called Andrew Weil. He coined 4-7-8 breathing. It's simply breathe in through four counts, very slow. Hold for seven, and I'm not going to do it up here because I get lightheaded when I demonstrate. It's great to do if you're in the middle of the night and you can't sleep or you're sitting in a relaxed place. Don't do it while you're driving either. Four counts in, hold for seven, exhale for eight. Four, seven, eight, breathing. See how many cycles of that you can get through, and perhaps you'll be sleeping before you've got a few cycles done. Inhale for four, hold for seven, exhale for eight. Prayer also. I feel much more peaceful and secure when I'm praying or after I've prayed, though I'm a little ashamed of how quick I fall asleep sometime when I'm praying. So that has to kind of be maybe the timing, again, prayer timing. But many people tell me if they have a lot of their other sleep hygiene things right, but they miss their daily devotional time or the meditation time, their prayer time, things are out of whack, and they can expect to not have their best day if that happens. Pilates, yoga, meditation, Tai Chi, as we see here happening, or similar type movements, they all decrease your anxiety, which therefore will decrease stress, and stress disrupts sleep. So those are all good. I thought this was an interesting side note. There's a study. Adults who spent 2 hours per week learning meditation and mindfulness. And I want to back up, because if you've never heard of the word mindfulness, simply put, it's being in the moment, letting thoughts come and letting them go, not stopping the thoughts, just allowing them to come and go. And there is an app for that called Headspace, am I right? An app if you wanted to start practicing mindfulness. So adults who spent 2 hours per week learning meditation or mindfulness, for 6 weeks they did this, but they never discussed sleep. They never even discussed the word sleep. They reported less insomnia and fatigue than those who spent the same time learning basic hygiene, sleep hygiene. So there's something that's to be said for not just hearing, but doing. So the actual doing the practices made a big difference. All right, we're nearing the end. So bear with me, you guys all still awake and refreshed for a little bit more. We're starting to lull into our sleep time, but not quite yet. I should get you out of here and home so you can start your routine, your sleep routine, and be in bed by 10. We want to start our routine how much earlier? We're going to stop the screens how much earlier? At least about an hour, and start that nightly routine. If it takes you 2 hours, you better get started a little earlier. Okay, so there's something called cognitive behavior therapy, sometimes CBT for short. The way I like to just simply put things, changing the way you look at it, changing the way you look at something, cognitive behavior therapy. That's why I was saying understanding and learning. I'm so glad you came tonight, because understanding sleep cycles and understanding sleep science and sleep hygiene, simply understanding it will help you. If you slept from 10 to 3 a.m. and you woke up at 3 a.m., no need to fret. Instead, say, this is fantastic. I've got my hours of power. I've got my hours of power. I don't need to fret. You can lie there and just relax and plan your day, or think your happy thoughts, or pray. Simply releasing that anxiety, because you know, you now understand it's normal to have that wake-up time. If you did your homework and you've got in bed and you've got great sleep from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m., wow, you're so far ahead of the game. That is the game changer right there, once again. And often, just relieving that anxiety, you'll doze back off to sleep. Pressure's off. Pressure's off. You're already ahead of the game. You have a great day in front of you. You've already got your restoration, and you'll have a great day. However, for racing thoughts, anybody ever have those? And this may happen, if it happens, especially throughout the night, or you know that so you've got these racing thoughts that are entering the sleep, your sleep routine, and these thoughts are still racing, here's what you do. Use cognitive behavior therapy called worry time. The hour before bed, an hour before, phone's off anyway, sit down with pen and paper, not your phone. Don't make notes in your phone. So just plain old-fashioned pen and paper, and download onto that paper all your current worries. Try your best to worry your hardest for 20 minutes. Give it all you got. Worry like crazy for 20 minutes. Jot down everything that comes to mind. When those 20 minutes are up, leave that list of worries where it is and proceed with your nighttime routine. If you're waking up in the middle of the night, same thing. After about 20 minutes, let it go. Come on out of bed and write the solution to that problem that's in your head. Or write that those burning thoughts that are there, write them down. But you're not going to put them in your phone. Don't go to a fluorescent lights in the kitchen and a bright room. Go to a quiet, old-fashioned lamp shade. Sit next to a lamp and maybe with a small blanket. Write those worries down. Write that solution down. And then head back to bed when you feel tired. All right. That actually concludes most of my sleep hygiene ideas. There's a wonderful handout I hope everyone got because it reviews what we discussed as far as the sleep disruptors, tips for better sleep, and then the sleep management goals. What is going to be your takeaway from what we learned today? Your goals, well, just try this or that. And it needs to be specific, needs to be measurable, attainable, and maybe be accountable to someone. So if you find a need for sleep hygiene, sleep science coaching, feel free to contact me. But I'm going to invite Dr. Murphy back up here so he can help me answer any questions that you have. On this sheet also are the recommended hours for children and teenagers and so on.